Vaccines have been sold as essential for our survival, and we're vaccinating a significantly larger number of kids because of it. Many hospital boards and healthcare systems even link incentive pay for executives and directors to their pediatric immunization rates. But there's much more than a conflict of interest going on here. Vaccinations, it appears, are downright dangerous. I'm Richard Lloyd-Jones, and today on Thinking with Somebody Else's Head, Rethinking Vaccines. Well, get ready to have your eyes opened. Dr. Roberto Giraldo has brought something very interesting to Brazil since moving here from New York City about a year ago. Giraldo is a Colombian medical doctor with a specialty in infectious diseases and immunology. He's worked a lot with AIDS patients all over the world and has much to say about the inverted medical system he's worked in for over 40 years. He's been talking a lot with Dr. Norberto Kepi lately, the scientist behind Analytical Trilogy, which is the science I base these programs on. They've been talking incessantly about the bad science Louis Pasteur brought to the world and the forgotten genius of Pasteur's contemporary, Antoine Béchamp. We'll explore all that a little more in our program today. If you start investigating the vaccine business, you're in for quite an eye-opening experience. First of all, be very clear about this. Vaccinations are a business. Forget all the drug industry hype about protecting our children. This is a profit-based endeavor through and through. A couple of years ago, independent market analyst Data Monitor commissioned a report from a vaccine analyst. And who knew there even was such a thing? Her name was Hedwig Kress, and she discussed the future outlook for vaccine profits. Turns out she's predicting that the introduction of high-priced vaccines will induce some rapid growth in the pediatric and adolescent vaccines market. She's predicting that market's going to quadruple by 2016 across the U.S., France, Germany, Italy, Spain, the U.K., and Japan. They're projecting it. That means they're going to try to make it happen, right? The crucial factor, what'll make these stupendous profits possible, is the, quote, introduction of a product into national vaccination schedules, end of quote. That means they're preparing product and marketing it through the highly paid lobbyists to government officials in all those countries. And then slipped in ominously right after this is consultant Ms. Kress's admission that this product introduction virtually guarantees market expansion and high coverage rates in the target population. Coverage rates. Oh, the language, right? That means the numbers of people who are vaccinated. You can just imagine the directors of the vaccine companies hashing it out with flow charts and projection sheets, talking about windows of opportunity and profit margins and return on investment. Kind of chills the blood, doesn't it? But you know what else guarantees that these new high-priced vaccines are adopted by various national vaccination schedules? Reimbursements. And you know what that means? Payments to directors of hospital boards and healthcare systems based on the immunization rates they achieve in their institutions. So they're paid if they increase the number of immunizations. That doesn't leave a very warm feeling in my heart either. With all this need for all this marketing, it makes you wonder about the efficacy of the marketed product, doesn't it? Kind of like junk food lobbyists pushing for their product's inclusion in school lunch programs. It may be good business, but I'm pretty sure the kids aren't going to benefit all that much. And so it is with vaccines, a dubious medical procedure with very little good science behind it. Now, I know this is a shock. Anything that cuts directly against the prevailing point of view always raises the hackles of some. But vaccinations, like Pasteur's germ theory itself, is something that's been marketed, peddled, actually, by some who stand to make a ton of money by promoting and supporting it. And that alone should make us take a second look, which we'll try to help you do today on Thinking with Somebody Else's Head with Dr. Roberto Giraldo. Let me just ask you to reiterate this principal difference between Pasteur and Béchamp. Again, let's just sort of start at the beginning with that, Giraldo.
Yes, I think at the end of the 19th century, there was a problem in France about fermentation for the grapes to make the wine. and the use of whip to make beer, champagne, all these things. And they asked several people, why, what is the problem that we are having with fermentation? Because they were having a funny taste with the wine and the beer, and the rich people were desperate with that. So Pasteur was one of the persons who started to study fermentation. Pasteur was a chemist. He was a teacher in the Sorbonne. He was dedicated just to chemistry, inorganic chemistry. He used to look for crystals of different things under the microscope. At the same time, there was Antoine Béchamp. He was a doctor. He was a teacher in universities as well. And both of them were the leaders of the fermentation. There were many other people who were studying fermentation. And Béchamp was a guy who loves microscope and to see things. And he was able to see that what causes fermentation was a fungus, a yeast. And he wanted to know the origin of the yeast, where the yeast were coming from. And he found out that the yeast came from inside the juice, from some particles that he was able to see under the microscope.
Which he called?
That he called it microzymes.
Microzymes.
Microzymes. And Pasteur decided that the cause of fermentation was different, that the fungus came from outside, from the air, that the yeast was on the air, and that from there they entered to the juices and caused the fermentation. So that's the beginning of the whole story.
Okay, so the basic difference is that Béchamp thought that there were conditions inside the subject being studied,
yes,
that created these problems,
yes,
not something from the outside. Exactly. Pasteur thought the other, and as we discussed in a previous podcast,
yes,
which we
yes
discussed well, this got spread throughout the whole medical system of the world,
yes,
actually. And Enderlein, Gunther Enderlein,
Gunther Enderlein is different. Gunther Enderlein is a guy who was living. He was born at the end of the 19th century in Germany, and he died in 1968 in Germany, so recently. So he was living, most of his life was in the first half of 20th century. Enderlein was a biologist, zoologist, and he took the research of Béchamp about the microzymes. Béchamp was able to see microzymes everywhere, in fruits, in vegetables, in water, on air. Those little particles that are moving.
Even in rocks, right?
Even in rocks, even in the salt, on the soil, everywhere. That's what he called the microzymes that were in the soil. He called the geological microzymes. He knew that they were everywhere and that they were the origin of everything. He knew that. They were the origin of everything. And Béchamp spent hours and hours under the microscope, and he was able to see that according to the condition of the blood, according to the condition of the grape juice for the fermentation, or according to the condition of the blood, the microzymes could migrate, could mutate to different things. For instance, if the condition of the blood were good, they helped the cells to be well. They even entered inside the red blood cells, or they went entering in the cells of the tissues, of the different tissues, because they were doing biopsies and they saw it. And he studied in animals, in dogs, cats, and he saw that the microzymes, when the animal or the tissue was equilibrated, they helped to preserve, to have a healthy cells. And that they enter to the cells, they help it there, and then they go out, and that they were eternal. They didn't die. When the person died, they stay.
And Enderlein was doing the same kind
okay
of research.
Enderlein took that and developed it even more,
okay,
because he used better microscopes, and he saw impressive things. And his studies are a little bit complicated. A little bit complicated because I think he was very perfectionist. And with a lot of details, I would like to know his psychopathology, because he was so perfectionist.
Impossible to read, too many details.
Yes,
right?
If you see the graphics that he made of the thing that he saw under the microscope, are unbelievable, Richard. unbelievable. He was able to see, for instance, that in the blood of a person, the microzymes, depending on the pH of the blood, change. If the pH was neutral, he saw the same like Bechau used to see, that the microzymes or endobionts enter to the cells and help the cells.
However, he called them endobionts, but it's the same thing as a microzyme.
It's the same thing.
Okay,
the same right. thing. He decided to put endobiont, that means life of the interior.
Okay.
And microzymes from Bechau, because microzyme was the enzymes for the fermentation.
Right.
Okay. So Enderlein was able to see, for instance, that if the pH of the blood was going to be acid, from neutral to acid, the microzyme started to mutate to bacteria and even to mutate to fungus. And as lower the pH, worse the situation. So he was able to demonstrate that bacteria and fungus were consequences of the inner life of the blood.
But both Bechamp and Enderlein were seeing this in terms of physical phenomena.
Yes.
Diet, pH.
Yes.
Dr. Kepi has sort of drawn a bigger circle.
Well, before Dr. Kepi, there were some other people who are already mentioning something about emotionals. In the last 20, 30 years, there are people who are working in quantum medicine. They saw something about emotional life, but very secondary, not like something important. But what makes the difference with the Bechamp, Enderlein, and Dr. Kepi is that Dr. Kepi is able to see that the main problem of the inner life is the emotional life, is the psychopathology of the person.
Yeah.
And I have an experience with Dr. Kepi, for instance, last week, with the microscope. We were seeing blood from different people that he knows very well the psychopathology of each person. And whenever we were seeing the blood, he was able to interpret the state of the red blood cells, white blood cells, or the microzymes according to the psychopathology of the person.
In other words, he was using the psychopathology to interpret without knowing who the blood was. He didn't know who the blood was.
No, he knew.
He knew. So he could say that this distortion in the blood cells is because of...
Because this person is very paranoid. For instance, he said, oh, look, the red blood cells are becoming in groups and isolated. They are not liberated. They are not living together. Logically, they become isolated in groups, in islands, like the person is. This person is very isolated. And things like that he was able to see. For instance, when the white blood cells were not moving, that happens very often when there is fear, Dr. Kepi was saying, oh, look, the white blood cells are not moving. Logically, this person is very paranoid. It has the persecutoria.
He's persecutory. He doesn't want to... Okay, he thinks everybody's attacking him.
Exactly, attacking him and things like that. And that's why the white blood cell cannot work. That is scared. They are becoming...
Terrified.
Terrified.
Terrified to do their job. Oh, that's very interesting.
Very interesting, because I think that's the main difference, Richard. And I'm learning a lot from him, because... Even that I had been in the issue of emotional for many years. Anyway, I think 2 years ago, when I started to work with the microscope here, I was seeing more the changes in the membrane of the white blood cell, red blood cells, and all the things, more like nutritional changes.
Yes.
Or mineral changes. Obviously that I knew that they were secondary to emotionals. But each time, with the help of Dr. Kepi, I'm more seeing the emotional thing in the blood itself. And I think that's the main difference between Bechamp, Enderlein, and Dr. Kepi. Just with the name, Richard, just with the name about the microzymes. Bechamp called them microzymes because they were related to fermentation, enzymes needed for the fermentation. Enderlein, Gunther Enderlein in Germany, called them endobionts, life, interior life. Dr. Kepi and us here are calling them energenes.
Energenes.
Energenes. Why? Because indeed, what they are, and we are learning it from Dr. Kepi, is that they are the very first materialization of essential energy. So all these particles that we are seeing in the animal kingdom, in the plants, or in the mineral kingdom, are just the very first condensation of essential energy.
First materialization, maybe.
Materialization.
Right?
Materialization.
This essential energy that Kepi has been talking about since the 90s in the
news. Exactly.
Kepi's book to read about this, as you're listening, if you're interested, is The New Physics, where he explores this brilliantly about the essential energy that lies behind both secondary energy, electromagnetic energy, and also the material structures that we see. And all of our science has been studying the secondary energy and not understanding anything about this essential energy, which Kepi really helps us to understand for the first time, really.
And listen, Richard, something, an experience that I had with Dr. Kepi on Monday, very interesting. For a while, I wanted to see, because I knew by Bechamp and Enderlein that the microsymes or the end of ions or energies were everywhere. However, for 2 years, we have been concentrating humans in the blood. Like a month ago, we started to check with Marcia Sgringelli, our dentist here, to see in the saliva, and they were there. They were, it's a little bit more difficult to see the saliva because the saliva has many other external contaminations. It's easier in the blood. But the saliva has also the same. But this week, I wanted to see in some other material. So we started to see in fruits, in vegetables. And on Monday, I had almost a shock because I was in plants, in vegetables, and they have endobionts. They have there, beautiful, the same thing, the same energy. They look exactly the same as the one that you are seeing in the blood, the same that you are seeing everywhere. However, what was the experience? The experience was with aloe vera leaves. That in Portuguese is called babosa, this plant that in...
Aloe vera, oh yes.
Aloe vera, that famous. Is very well, very famous all over the world. I have been studying this plant for many years, Richard, because I was fascinated that this plant is the only one that has been discovered by all cultures as a healing plant. You go to Africa and they have aloe vera. You go to Russia, you go to England, you go to Finland, United States, Canada, Colombia, Brazil, aloe vera, aloe vera, aloe vera. All the cultures of the world have been discovering for centuries that aloe vera is the king or the queen of the healing plants.
Yeah.
So we have one plant and we took a drop. Richard, it was amazing. What it has is just energies, just endobionts. That's it. Has nothing else but that. It's like a So it was amazing. So when I saw that, I called Dr. Kepi. He was in an eye working, and he came immediately. Giraldo, what happened? Dr. Kepi, I'm seeing here something very amazing. It's beautiful. This is... So he saw it, and he was also in shock. And he said something beautiful. He said, oh, my God, this is beautiful. This is pure essential energy. This is divine energy in this plant. Logical. They don't have the... original sin. They don't have will.
They don't have a will to take them away from their true essence.
Exactly.
They are what they are, right?
They are what they are. So it was very, very touching experience.
Yes, very beautiful.
Beautiful.
Geraldo, I'd like to morph a little bit now because I was reading in a London newspaper today that they're rushing through vaccines for this swine flu, this alleged swine flu that's around, and they're planning to have enough vaccines in England by the end of the year to vaccinate the whole country. It's 56 million people. And they're rushing it through very fast because they're terrified about this disease. And I've been thinking a lot, and we've been talking a lot about this here, how the whole idea of disease coming from a virus, from a bacteria from the outside, is based on Pasteur.
Yes.
If Pasteur,
absolutely.
Yes. This is totally clear,
yes.
Right? If Pasteur was incorrect, and it appears that he was not only incorrect, but a very bad scientist,
yes.
Knowingly so, if he was this way, then all of our medicine, if he was wrong, which it appears he was, all of our medicine needs to change. And this whole thing about vaccines is totally a hoax to frighten people and to make a lot of money for some people.
There are many mistakes, not only in medicine, Richard, in dentistry, in industry, in agricultural sciences, because nowadays they use, for instance, antibiotics to kill supposed microbes. For instance, they are giving antibiotics to chicken, to beef. So the food, the meat that we are eating is a meat full of antibiotics.
Yeah, and hormones.
And hormones. But the antibiotics are based on Pasteur, and also the hormones and all these crazy ideas. But also they are industrially, they are building a lot of products just for human use. The toothpaste with antibiotics, antiseptics to kill the germs. Last night in the television, I was seeing a program, unbelievable, a Pasteurian program about a new product to kill the germs in the sanitary, in the toilet. And they show these germs and that the other...
This is terrorism. These shows on Discovery Channel now are they're terrorism, exactly. Showing the lung worm inside the animal that's eating the lungs.
Exactly. All this idea about germs attacking us, about parasites attacking us, about even insects attacking us, is a Pasteurian idea. And many, many people... Millions of people are dead due to this terrible mistake of the views of Pasteur.
And vaccines are deadly because they've shown now. Where did I read the statistics?
Yeah, the one who started with the vaccine was Jenner. Jenner was a little bit. It was in 1700, but it was different with back. That was the name is vaccine because he was working with smallpox, with the cows. But he started there. With some observation, that's what is called vaccine because it comes from cows.
Yeah.
Vacca in Greek is cows. But Pasteur, even in the times when Pasteur was alive, he created what used to be called at the beginning the bacteriological institutes that were built by the France government and then was generalizing for all the countries of the planet. And then, even in the life of Pasteur, the institutes were changed the name from Bacteriological Institute to Pasteur Institute, that still we have all over the planet. What was the goal of the Pasteur Institute in those days? Was very clearly, is there in the history of the Academy of Sciences of France, was to sell antiserums. Antiserum was the name that they gave initially to vaccines.
It was a business operation.
It's a business operation.
Look at that.
No doubt at all. And so the whole idea of the vaccines was born on a business idea. And it's very sad because many people nowadays in the planet, they think about vaccines, about something good, something nice for our children. And it's absolutely unnecessary.
Yeah, let me talk about some statistics. There's an interesting article in a toxicology and environmental toxicology publication a couple months ago showing that the amount of thimerosal found in vaccinations is sufficient to cause damage to neurons, similar to the damage found in children with autism.
Yes, exactly.
So now... this link between vaccinations and autism is not a new one. This has been
talked about many years. Oh, yes. I remember a lecture that I gave in 1994 in New York. I was invited by some pediatricians because they knew me and they knew that I was against Pasteur and against vaccination. And I presented several papers that already they were there, scientific papers, demonstrating the link between autism and vaccines. And many people now, they have no doubt at all that autism did not exist before vaccination.
And look, because there's almost 50% mercury in these preservatives that they use for these vaccines, because they want to have multiple vaccines, so they have to put a preservative in there.
Yes.
It's almost 50% mercury. That's a hazardous material for the Department of Defense. Mercury poisoning is linked to cardiovascular disease, autism, seizures, mental retardation, hyperactivity, dyslexia, many other nervous system disorders. The world, the Western world, is full of autism today.
These consequences.
Dyslexia, hyperactivity. This bipolar condition that we're seeing?
Even I saw some research, Richard, linking vaccination to the use of drugs, street drugs, cocaine, marijuana, all these drugs, because people are very hyperactive and very excited, and they want to do more crazy things. Even I saw some papers, I remember a couple of years ago, I saw some papers in Cornell University in the library, linking vaccination to the criminality, as higher the number of vaccines that the children were receiving, the higher the incidence of criminality in those communities. The people who were older, like me, I'm now 65, people who were old, like me, we got very few vaccines. Yeah. I remember perhaps one or two vaccinations, thanks God. Nowadays, for instance, in the United States, when a person is 15, he already received 36 vaccines.
36 vaccines.
Vaccines.
Yeah, that's much more than I received, too. I'm younger than you, a little bit younger. I didn't receive that many.
No. Richard, it's crazy what they are doing, because they are inventing a vaccine for against every single thing. Now, the links to many things is very clear with vaccination. Why I was starting to study vaccination years ago? My issue with vaccination started with AIDS, because I started to study AIDS in 1981 with the first cases of AIDS. However, I was started to study immune deficiencies since 1965 when I was a medical student, because I always used to believe that the terrain, that the inner part was very important. So I started with the immune system. Now I am in the emotional part. Studying this issue with AIDS, I discovered many papers linking seropositivity, HIV positivity, to the number of vaccinations.
But I've heard this for many years.
Yes. Higher the number of vaccines that a person receives, higher the risk to test positive in the so-called test for HIV.
And why is that? What's the reason?
Because what we are indeed detecting on these tests are high amount of antibodies in the blood of a person. As higher the number of vaccines, higher the number of the antibodies.
Antibodies that are acting inside the body.
Inside the body. Antibodies trying to defend for many things. So what we are detecting in these tests is the number of antibodies in general. So
let's be very clear about that. The AIDS test is testing the reaction, the antibody reaction of the body. It's not testing an HIV virus.
And it is saying that happened in Africa. That's why so many people testing positive in Africa and in poor countries, in the third world countries. Why? Because there, people are reacting. Some of the reaction is against vaccines, because there are campaign of vaccination in all these poor countries. But besides that, people in those poor conditions, they are more exposed to bacteria, parasites, to infections that really exist. So they react more. So they produce higher amounts of antibodies. But not only that, Richard, I discovered recently that people who are emotionally very disturbed have higher amount of antibodies. Why does it happen? Because when a person is depressed, when the person is sick, mentally sick, depressed, paranoid, he produces what is called stress proteins, releases to the blood.
Yeah.
And the immune system produces antibodies against those stress proteins. So crazier the person is, higher the amount of antibody that the person has.
Let's be really paranoid now, you and I together, yes. Geraldo. Could they be pushing vaccination so strongly now to generate more HIV positive results?
That's a one possibility, Richard. And then
they make big money on both selling vaccinations and the expensive AIDS treatment.
Yes, Richard. This is one of the one because with this idea with the swine flu that they are and all this vaccination that they want to vaccinate the whole country in different countries in Europe, the United States, especially South America, Latin America, and I think one of the reasons could be intentionally to create HIV positivity, and then to sell the antiretroviral. But I still have a feeling, Richard, that the intentions could be even worse than that. Because for many years, I know that, for example, the Population Council is an organization, private, created by Ford Foundation and Rockefeller Foundation in the 50s. To control the population of the planet.
Yeah.
The headquarters of Population Council is in New York. I have some friends that are inside, that are spies, that are inside, and they tell us what is going on there.
We won't reveal their name.
Yes, no. And the main goal of Population Council is to decrease the population of the planet. Because for them, there are too many people here, obviously, because they want the planet to be only for the few families of them.
Right.
So for them, there are too many people here. For them, which is not true. This planet is enough for many, many, many people.
Yeah.
I remember when I was a medical student, and until recently, pregnant women was something sacred. You take all the care of the world with pregnant women. And now, They are promoting vaccination for pregnant women.
Yeah.
No, this is a crime.
Let me just finish. We should wrap it up here.
We
could talk a couple of hours, and we should talk more about this. But I read something very scary today in a London newspaper on the internet. The WHO, they're defending the development of these vaccines by these big companies. They're defending this now, saying to people, don't worry, this is old and proven technology, they say. What we've just shown from the beginning of this program and what Dr. Norberto Kepi has been talking about the last couple of months nonstop with your help is that this is not proven technology. This is based on Pasteur, completely wrong science. There are books written about this. There's a book that's arriving today from me for you and I, written by a woman in France at the time of Pasteur and Béchamp, showing that Pasteur was a hoax. He was totally a charlatan.
Charlatan. I'm more than charlatan. He was a corrupted guy.
And so this science is not, if you're listening to it, this is not proven. Don't believe what the WHO says,
exactly.
World Health Organization. This is totally unproven science. Yes. In fact, it's dead wrong science. And I use the word dead deliberately.
Yes. And what is amazing, Richard, is to see how journalists now, they are so alienated, and people of the planet as well. Most of the people in this planet are so alienated. The media is following all these stupid things. It's like they don't have intuition to feel that something wrong is beside this hysteria of the swine flu. And most people on the planet, it's like they are dormant. So we need to help them to awake, to see that something is wrong behind all this and that the real intentions are different.
Well, if you've been educated like me, this is all no doubt a shock. But I encourage you to investigate more about the bad science of Pasteur and the good science of Roberto Giraldo and Norberto Kepi. And I'm available to help steer you in the right direction. Rich@richjonesvoice.com. This is Thinking with Somebody Else's Head. I'm Richard Lloyd-Jones. Talk to you next time.